Welcome to the Contact Center Expert Show. This show is hosted by Nancy Monroe, CEO of Verbal Transactions, a voice enablement technology company. Join our discussion on how you can make your contact center a well-oiled machine.
All right.
Well, 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 we've got our audience here. They're they're socially distanced, which is good, you know. They're all wearing masks. We had hand sanitizer when they came through the door. So Mark, have no fear. You're going to be safe. So let me introduce you, though. Mark Brody is a seasoned contact center operations leader and has worked with several industry leaders during his 30-year career in the contact center space. His consultancy, Brohawk Solutions, LLC, was born out of Mark's passion to help organizations become more effective and efficient through understanding how their people, process, and technology impact the employee experience and ultimately the customer experience. Mark also serves as an independent consultant and evaluator for the J.D. Power Contact Center practice. In Mark's spare time, he currently leads the Austin Contact Center Alliance, which I know he's very active in, and serves as the board of directors for United Way of Williamson County in Texas. He is a graduate of the University of Kansas and currently resides in Round Rock, Texas, with his wife, daughter, and two dogs, and is a new hacker in the world of golf and is an avid Jayhawk basketball and New England sports fan. That's interesting. That's interesting. Okay. Well, welcome, Mark.
It's all over the board there. Hey, thanks a lot, Nancy.
Yeah, so let's talk about this. As I was reading this earlier, I thought, oh, you went to the University of Kansas in Kansas City, Missouri?
No, actually in Lawrence, Kansas, which is about 30 30 miles west of Kansas City. So there was a period of my life where I was actually a Kansas City Chiefs fan, a Royals fan, but I never lost that love for the Red Sox and Patriots, Celtics, Bruins. So,
well, we won't hold that against you.
Excellent.
So let's get right on our topic because there's so much to talk about. I think you coined the phrase or shared the phrase with me, the year of the great pivot. And boy, did everybody have to pivot this year. And, you've seen firsthand, you know, because of your working experience with the contact centers, especially in the Austin location and other locations. But what would you say was the most common thing that all these organizations had, other than getting people to work remotely? Obviously, it was problem number one, but were there any other kind of themes that you kept seeing throughout that pivoting stage?
You know, for organizations that the pivot was not something that was planned, you know, it's interesting how Zoom fatigue really took over.
Yes.
And you know, that was something that I saw early on, and then people kind of settled into what's the right amount of Zoom, or not trying to pimp Zoom, but you know, it's a household name now. So
yes,
you know, the virtual world, you know, virtual conferences, virtual events, things like that. You know, people got really, really fatigued on that. And so they mistook, I think, in having Zoom meetings throughout the day as employee engagement. And they're really two different things.
Right.
You know, employee engagement, I think, is where people have kind of missed the mark, or not necessarily missed the mark, but struggled with. What's that right amount of virtual interaction versus more passive interaction? And I think it really depends on the individual that you're trying to engage with and the culture of the organization. I think that's really where people have struggled the most with.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that, because they're not only doing it at work, they're doing it with kids' school, they're doing it with other family members. I mean, it's just, you know, and everybody had a much greater appreciation for good lighting right off the bat.
Yes.
Because everybody had, you know, be on camera, you know, and some people just like, I don't want to be on camera. And you know, that's part of a cultural thing as well, I believe, because certain vendors I would get on calls with, and because a lot of times I'm sharing my screen or sharing a lot of resources, I don't want my camera on, and they took that as being offensive, like I was afraid to, you know, show my face. But it was like, no, it's kind of a resource issue for me. But yeah, I would agree that that is the fatigue side of it. You know, and I would also say that I think there was an article in the Wall Street Journal, an HR person from Discover Card said that it almost had, he feels that when we're able to go back to an office, that we'll see a lot of people want, you know, in droves kind of trying to go back. But I'm hearing both sides. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you're hearing that once we can go back to physical space, do you see call centers going back to on-site, or you see a mix of that?
I really see more of a mix in, a mix of that, because I think we're what a lot of contact centers that were already in the cloud space, as an example, they had as part of their disaster recovery program or plan to go ahead and move people home. Now that they've had to be at home for an extended period of time, they've identified the gaps. And the only way to truly identify the gaps that they have, and it could be through employee engagement, virtual training, virtual learning, coaching and development, you know, whatever it is, they've invested a lot of resources over the past year to try and close the gaps. And I think what we're going to see in 2021 is the Great Awakening, so to speak, for call centers, where it's like, okay, we struggled through, or we managed through the processes, you know, what was 2021, of 2020, hopefully 2021 doesn't say, wait, hold my beer, look what I got for you.
Right.
I think a lot of organizations are going to be continuing to invest in improving their remote capabilities, and to really be able to offer as a differentiator for the employee, the ability to come into the office when they need to or when they want to, but also have the ability to work for teams to work remote. And I think it really, for organizations that have been so localized and may have been struggling with hiring within their market, I think it creates some additional flexibility where you don't have to be physically in place in proximity with an individual, a new hire, et cetera, in order to go ahead and get the same quality of work done. You could be anywhere. The whole work from anywhere theme is one that I really see exploding.
So how – let's visit that a little bit. So how has that, do you think, realigned certain business strategies in call centers, because now they can recruit from anywhere, and you know, have you seen that people have realigned maybe some of their either job descriptions or the way that the types of managers that they're hiring to, because they can hire people from different regions? You know, have you seen any of those realignments taking place?
Yeah, I started to hear some rumblings of it, where, you know, the person that you need to be okay with working remotely is not always the same person that you would hire to work in person.
Right.
And so taking a look at hiring practices, being able to get folks that are a little bit more, I would say, technically competent, that are, or not competent, but maybe comfortable. They know where their router is. They can do some basic troubleshooting. As an example, they know how to turn their camera on and off, and be able to locally troubleshoot. I think that's a skill set that for a contact center agent wasn't necessarily something that was needed previously. But going forward, in order to work remotely, you're going to have those types of individuals that have that skill set. And then on top of that, you're going to need to have, you know, managers and supervisors who can be that first tier one support before it gets escalated into the IT area for troubleshooting.
No, I think you're absolutely right. You know, I've recently ran into a situation where we're trying to get somebody to just install, you know, a pretty basic file and how to open it, and you know, change of just a couple of settings to get the her to use the simulator. And yeah, when they're not tech savvy, you're like, no, the next button, no, one over from that, the next one next to that,
exactly.
It looks like this.
You know, on a, you know, from a personal perspective, I mean, you know, Nancy, you and I have talked over throughout the year, and you know, that my wife and I adopted our daughter, and we also got married during this year as well. And,
yeah.
You know, a lot of those events, we had Zoom calls or Zoom meetings, and the engagement with some folks that weren't as comfortable with the technology, you know, it's like, okay, you need to mute your phone. You can't be
somewhere
in public listening to this and be able to be okay with your phone not on mute.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think there's definitely a greater awareness of the environment that people are sitting in, that people are working out of. And
yep.
It's easy for some folks to say, yeah, you know, just you can work at home, you know, just have a quiet area. Well, that quiet area may be their bedroom. That quiet area may be their kitchen table while their kids are doing virtual schooling in other places.
Right.
And so while I would say it's easier said than done, for some families, and as managers, I think you have to have that skill set, or leaders, you have to have that skill set where you can lean into those problems that people are struggling with, and be able to work with your employees to go ahead and troubleshoot. You know, if you're not total 100% phones, but you may have some offline work. Well, how can we go ahead and integrate some offline work with for agents so that they don't have to have that noise in the background? And I say noise, it's not noise, it's light. So
right. No, you're right. And I think from an IT perspective, you know, because they've had a scramble, because I think I was at a PACE event a year ago, and someone gave me the statistic that 75% of contact centers were still on premise a year ago.
Yep.
And for all of them to scramble to try to get something up in the cloud, you know, both soft phones and internet and applications, and be in a, you know, they have tight security and all those requirements, you know, to put in place. I'm sure they were scrambling, but you know, to your point, it's just, how do we get those people, you know, so maybe they started to create some kind of job aids, or maybe they started to create some kind of new support ticketing systems or different levels of priority based upon, because it can be a huge time waster if, you know, it could be something that's a very simple fix, but if you're right, if you don't have somebody that's kind of that front line that knows how to put out those fires pretty quick, it could be a huge time waster.
Well, and let's talk about the cloud providers as well for a moment. I had spoken to somebody recently, and I want to say that 80% of the largest contracts within the cloud technology space are coming up for either renewal or over the course of the next 2 years. So your CCaaS, UCaaS type of providers, you know, really have to reinvent the products and the processes that they're working with their clients on, and being able to make sure that they're keeping up on the cutting edge from an integration, from a technology perspective. I think that's going to be a real challenge. And so you may have someone that is on technology A that says, you know what, this is a great technology, but I need it to do 1, 2, and 3, and it doesn't do that. So because of that, and because of the engagement characteristics potentially, we're going to make that switch. And you know, Nancy, I know I'm preaching to the choir on this one, but sometimes some of those lift and shifts are not lifts and shifts. Those are cultural. They've been ingrained in the culture for so long. It can be very painful. But I see the next year to 2 years, people really evaluating the technologies that they have, and are they really working for them in this sort of new world order?
Yeah, and I have a great example of that. It just happened to me today. I was we've been trying to put our simulator out in a virtual environment. We did that before COVID hit, but even more so, reasons for it. But we wanted to go to because we're part of the Microsoft Startup Program. We get a lot of services partnered with them at low cost or no cost right now. And so we thought, let's put everybody in a Windows virtual desktop environment. This is great. We just, create one footprint and we just push it all to all these desktops and let our customers use that environment. Don't have to upset their local machine. They don't have to upset their IT people. It's all kind of a software as a service. And what we found out was, this was back in June, it does not support using your local microphone, so we need speech rec. And I thought, well, that's I'm like, oh no, so back to the drawing board. So then today I'm researching it again and following this trail of discussion boards, and because just to your point, Teams, so everybody's using Teams or Zoom, and there was a lot of organizations that were using Zoom, even though I know they're probably a huge Microsoft house. Well, guess what? Teams was not supporting use of the microphone to use as a VoIP voice.
Wow.
And yeah, exactly. And especially if you're in a Windows virtual desktop environment, or a Citrix environment, right? And so this thread went from like May down to August. And so by August, where I reached the end of the thread, somebody said, oh, just install the RDP app, the desktop app from Windows on your computer or your phone, and it works. Because of COVID, they scrambled to like, oh, gee, we've got all these people on these virtual desktops, and they're using Teams, and they can't use Teams unless they're on the phone, which we know is not the best use of our software. So they scrambled and, had to really accelerate that, getting the microphone to work in a virtual environment. And so it works now, but, I kind of had that entry-level experience, way back in May and June, and sure enough, everybody else that's a Microsoft house, was kind of pushing them to make those changes. So you're absolutely right. We're going to see a lot of those cloud tools, get tighter with their integrations with different APIs. I know that Salesforce, they were really ahead of the game way back when of getting those integrations done. The challenge with Salesforce is, it's such a proprietary environment that I kind of lived through a couple of those implementations of trying to get an app to work inside Salesforce. And then you're kind of at their mercy, and you always have to, revenue share, so there's pros and cons to that as well.
Definitely. Honestly, your solution, the simulator, is one of those, what I would call a next level type of product offering, because from a recruiting standpoint, you can really, you don't have to be a call center expert, but you can, as an HR person, you can lean into and partner with your operation folks to understand what a call needs to be. And then you can really do that next level weed out through using the simulator to really understand, hey, does someone meet the minimum requirements? Is their tone effective? Are they able to follow a script? Are they able to do all the basic things that we would want them to do for a role in a contact center job? And I think your product is well positioned to fill that space. Have all these other assessments out there, but not having something that can really tell how someone is going to act and interact on a phone conversation in a mock environment, I think that's a real opportunity for a lot of organizations.
Yeah, and thanks for pointing that. But the other thing too, which came out of this when we were working with Microsoft, they had call centers obviously all over the world, and they were working with one out of Vietnam, and my first thought was, oh boy, how bad are their accents? And they said, well, I said, well, we do have trouble understanding them once in a while. And I said, okay. And then when they started using the simulator, they thought our simulator wasn't working. And I said, no, I think it's probably doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing. If the software can't understand you, then a person can't understand you. And sure enough, once they got to the production floor, they got all kinds of complaints from customers that they just couldn't, you know, it's not that they weren't trying, it's just, you know, that's just the nature of their language. And so it became an English proficiency tool. So, you know, if HR is worried about not hiring somebody because they feel they're going to be have bias, you know, well, it's, you need a certain level of English proficiency, you know, in specific call centers in order to service the customer well. So, you know, they could use it as another means of weeding people out, you know, not because of a specific interracial bias, but because the skill set's just not there.
Exactly. Well, and it can tell, it can, you can program it so that there are certain key industry jargon terms if people are having difficulty in pronouncing, and I don't care where in the world someone's from. I mean, when I started school at Kansas, coming out from New Hampshire, people looked at me and said, hey, you talk funny. I'm like, no, y'all talk funny. And it was, there were certain things, certain, I mean, even today, you know, I'll say draw, and they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, yeah, the thing that you put your clothes in, you know, you set of drawers, you know, and they're like, no, that's drawer.
Drawer.
And, you know, drawer. And I'm like, okay. So being able to things and how efficiently or proficiently someone's going to be able to communicate on a conversation, because you don't want to go up to that agent and say, look, you know, your quality score is horrible because people can't understand you. You want to be able to make sure that you're matching that person to the right set of calls that they should be taking that's going to make your brand look more look best. So
because they did put them in as chat support people because they were still proficient in how to solve problems. It's just, you know, their verbal side of the conversation, you know, was just too difficult to understand, but they still had the talent to, you know, be chat agents and could read and write English at a certain level. So that, you know, that still worked out, but it became something that they put forward with every single Azure support call center that, you know, they treated it. So we gave them up to two chances to give the response right. And then the bot would actually say, hey, I didn't quite understand you. Maybe you're speaking too fast. Or not enunciating. Let's try it one more time, and then we would indicate in the reporting, in the analytics, did not get past third attempt, you know, English proficiency, and it, you know, so they can quickly eyeball that report to say, oh, they got, you know, 6 out of 10 of those, you know, showing up on this report. We probably, but they knew how to do this X, Y, and Z. So let's make them chat agents versus voice.
Yep. You know, I mean, one of the most basic fundamentals of contact center management is making sure that you have the properly trained employees in the right place at the right time, basically. And if the most basic piece of the training is being able to communicate effectively, if you fail that, then you know, your contact center is going to have opportunities.
Right. So you might as well be proactive about it right out of the gate.
Exactly.
And now that, you know, you're not kind of confined to a geographic space, you can reach out, you know, hundreds of thousands of miles beyond what your normal search was, you know, to bring in that larger pool of people.
Well, and there are some advantages to doing that. I mean, there are some communities that some geographical locations that it's just not cost effective to have a brick and mortar contact center. But there are rural areas around that larger metro hub where you can go ahead and actively recruit, you know, folks either through, you know, any of the online search tools or Facebook ads, Google ads, you know, where things are popping up to people that are located in certain geographical areas, that would make sense for your brand and your organization. So,
yeah, that's reminds me of a previous show we did with a gentleman that manages call centers in the Midwest in very rural, smaller mm-hmm. communities. And what he said was, our turnover is like, you know, tiny because there aren't any other jobs in the area. So he has great long-term
yeah.
employees that have been there 15, 20 years, you know, with clients that they've been managing all of those, you know, they're on first name basis. They know each other. They're like coworkers. They've been there so long. So there are definitely advantages of, you know, a rural kind of population that you're picking from because they are somewhat constricted and refined if they need to be in a, you know, territory that they want to kind of stick to a local kind of career base.
Yeah, and you know, as an employee, if I'm located 50 miles from the closest population center,
mm-hmm.
do I really want to drive there in the dead of winter, or during spring storm season, or you know, any you know, when it's 110 out? Do I really mm-hmm. want to do that, or do
yeah.
I just want to have the commute from my bedroom to my desktop, and that's
right.
long enough, you know?
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Well, is there one? It's probably not easy to answer this, but is there one or two examples of what you feel creates loyalty within a call center?
I think that the number one thing is how people are treated.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just that every time an employee has a question or a request that the answer is automatically yes. It's how am I as an employee being developed for the next
mm-hmm.
for my next role?
Mm-hmm.
Is there succession planning? Is my manager bought into my development? But then also even more basic. Does the organization, is the mission and vision of the organization aligned with what my values are?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for instance, if you're an organization that values volunteerism as part of the culture, but you don't offer volunteer opportunities to your employees, then there's a misalignment there. And,
yeah. Yeah.
you know, employees are going to pick up on it, and they're going to try and align themselves, you know, with companies that do match that. Same thing with, you know, you hear a lot of companies saying, you know, we value work-life balance.
Mm.
Do you really?
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
what does that really mean to you? And so it's not just talking the talk to attract the best talent in, but it's actually walking the walk. I have
yeah.
Somebody I came across, you know, recently that, you know, he had a death in his family back a few months back, and the company was like, okay, you know, we believe in work life balance. Go take care of what you need to with your family, and you know, the assumption was made that when they returned, you know, they wouldn't have a desk full of to-dos. And
oh, sure.
Unfortunately, it was just the opposite. That person's supervisor or manager wasn't able to step in and take over for this person. And
mm-hmm.
as a result, their workload was double what it
doubled.
Was
yeah.
before they.
Jeez.
Yeah. And so it's that the ability of an organization to not just talk the talk, but also walk the walk.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Because I posted something the other day. You know how you can show appreciation during Thanksgiving, and one of them is
mm-hmm.
Zoom. Actually, if you buy a book just for your own
uh-huh.
personal use, they'll reimburse you for it. You know, because they value education. And so I'm like, oh, that's a really, you know, encouraging people to read versus just all of us, you know,
yeah.
gobbling up hours and hours of Netflix or whatever. It's like, yeah, pick up a book once in a while, and if you do, we'll pay you back for it and reimburse you. So I thought that was a nice way to show your appreciation.
My wife's company, you know, they reimbursed up to $100 every single month for whatever it is that you need because you're working at home. And that could be, you know, you could submit a receipt for groceries. That's okay. You know, you could submit for Christmas presents. That's okay. Just submit. Just make sure you spend this extra $100 every single month. And, you know, it's a great way for the organization to really walk the walk.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
And so it's while some families may not need that extra $100, others, I mean, that could be the difference between keeping the lights on or having food for a week. So.
Well, on that happy note, let's wrap it up for today. And I really appreciate you being on our show and our audience. It's just thrilled that you were able to.